Now that I know this is audio only, so
Is it so you're at Uni Queensland, University of Queensland?
yeah, so I'm using the podcast room because my house tends to be surrounded by gardeners for some reason. So just trying to avoid the whippersnippers and yeah.
I never got to use the podcast rooms, but I did a lot of recording at UQ, and every one of them has crows in the background.
Oh, really?
There's so many crows near the physics building.
I'd first like to acknowledge the Jagera and Turrbal people as the traditional custodians of Meanjin, the land from which we record today. I pay my respects to Jagera and Turrbal elders, past, present, and emerging. Today we're speaking with Alicia Sometimes, writer, award-winning poet, and broadcaster. She's given a TED talk, edited a national literary journal, done breakfast radio with the ABC. She's performed her spoken word all over Australia and internationally. Meanwhile, you can find her poems in many respected publications, including Best Australian Poems, Best Australian Science Writing, Overland, The Age, Griffith Review, to name only a few. So, Alicia, sometimes thank you for joining us today on Science Right Now.
Pleasure. And I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land I'm on today, the Boonwurrung people of the East Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders, past and present. And yes, I did a TEDx talk at University of Queensland, where you're
Yes.
talking to me from today, not a TED talk, because they're very different things. I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
Oh, yeah, of course. So TEDxUQ, that was so honoring your wonder, observing the world through art and science. And something I really did want to note about that is just how much your poetry comes through in your body. I think it is important to note that you are a performer of your words, whereas I think poetry, or at least, I'm fairly ignorant in some ways to the poetry scene here in Brisbane and Australia largely. It seems like a very much a published culture, but you've said yourself you're a lover of words, and that so comes through in the physicality and even just the lyricism of your poems as well. It's so musical. I have a musical background, and even reading it, it's hard to, if you've ever been a singer or even, a guitarist or something, you find that it's very hard to remove yourself from the musicality of those words when you're reading them. So in Stellar Atmospheres, one of the poems that you actually touch on in that TED talk, it is first 3 minutes. You've no doubt received a lot of recognition and praise for that piece, and I absolutely love it. Could you tell us a bit about that poem?
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad you resonated with that. And it's the oldest poem in the book, and it's one that I wrote quite a few years ago. And it's so fascinating that you talk of performance, because yes, I have a performance background, and have been a musician, or I am a musician. I just don't play as often as I'd like. But musicality and language is so important. And yeah, there's so many incredible poets who are performers, and then ones who have that, who do both, who have that safety of page as well. And I just love writing for the page and playing with the words and playing with the alliteration and the musicality. And that to me is so important, not at the expense of the meaning or the symbolism or anything like that, but I love the way something sounds, and I read something out over and over and over and over again. But sometimes I just write purely for the visual aspect and play around with the language. So sometimes that doesn't translate to performance. And First 3 Minutes is one of those ones that just for me had that beauty of both. And it was inspired by Steven Weinberg, who wrote a book called The First 3 Minutes. And just about those moments after the Big Bang, in the beginning of the universe, scientists aren't quite sure what happened in those microseconds. There's still debate about that. There's still what was, was there another universe before? Did we come out of nothing? There is a million questions, and really smart people are working on that. And I find that fascinating. But the fact that in those first 3 minutes, we all started forming and little bits of atoms and protons and neutrons and electrons and so forth, and in different steps. I just fell in love with that. And I was about 10 or 11. And it's really interesting because I've spoken to scientists who have said, a couple of scientists who have said that book inspired them to become scientists. And it inspired me to become a poet. So
that's something I did want to ask you about, actually, because I remember you saying that it did inspire you to become a poet. And I just thought, you're obviously so knowledgeable about, astrophysics. And what I did want to say about that poem just before we move on to that, it was kind of like, it was like you took two jigsaw puzzles, one that was, on the cosmic and one that was on humanity, and they were both whole, but somehow when you put them together, they still became a perfect picture. And that's what blew my mind about the piece, is that you took these two things that people mightn't ordinarily marry together and think of in terms of particularly their personal human experience. And I just love that about the whole collection, that you so skillfully, it's like you give humanity to the stars and you give, this cosmic element to human connection. And it's such a beautiful collection of, they're not all on the stars and that sort of thing. But do tell us about why was it poetry and not science that became your path?
Yeah, oh, bless you for all those very, very kind words. I'd like to hire you as my publicist. very kind, and I'm always glad when someone resonates with that humanity, because that's really important to me. And why poetry and not science? Simply because I was told very early on that there was not many famous astronomers or astrophysicists who were women. And that it was just one teacher that did that, and it just really put me off. And then I had some other great ones, but I just thought, okay, my art is where I'm at, because I paint and play music and do, I just can't not create like many, many artists. So I always went down that path. But what kept pulling me was science. And whenever I did those, whether it was personality tests or career days or whatever, it came out, you should be a scientist. And so it was like, I don't know, because of course scientists are incredibly smart and incredibly good at what they do. And I think now, knowing the realm of science, perhaps I could have got into something, but at the time I thought, I am no good with data sets. I am no good with patients. I am no good with that incredible analytical ability that scientists have, but they are also very, very creative as well, and obviously very, very passionate about what they do. So by my bed is genuinely always a book on science, and it's something that I am completely immersed in and have written about many things over the years, but I've always gone back to that moment of, where did we come from? Where are we going? And what are we made of? And mortality is something that I've thought about forever, about what's left of us when we leave. And when I was younger, I thought, oh, it might be a body of work that I make, or it might be some art piece or something. But now, I don't know, maybe it is just age. I just think it's our humanity that we leave, that that we can only hope to make a difference with is something akin to connection and understanding. And but the truth is, truly, I'm just a science nut, and I'm so fascinated with how things work. And I know that astrophysicists are doing it well. They don't need me on their team, but I love chatting to them, and I've found them just incredibly amazing.
Yeah. And how did they receive you too? Because I mean, I'm sure they would have been somewhat familiar with you as a public figure, but in terms of, scientists receiving a creative person, it might be easy to assume that they might either be confused or maybe they're kind of like, why are you so curious about what we do? And, maybe not see the common ground there.
I'm certainly, thank you very much. I don't think that I'm a public figure, as in poets aren't famous. I wish they had groupies or t-shirts or something. I found that most scientists, if not all, that I've encountered are incredibly curious, incredibly passionate about science communication and getting other people to understand their work, so they can underestimate themselves in the way that they talk. They might be shy, or they might not have public speaking experience. But when you sit down and you say, "Okay, tell me about how this works," they are articulate, poetic, full of imagery, full of metaphor, full of they're trying to grapple with it as well. Otherwise they wouldn't be studying it. So there's some aspect that they're kind of unsure about, but there's very, many aspects they are sure about. So they're very welcoming, and I ask a lot of questions, but I also love listening. So I love just letting someone tell me what they want to tell me as well. And I was very lucky to be where you are at the University of Queensland last year with Tamara Davis and
Yes.
the school, her team at the School of Physics. And, she is one of the kindest people ever. And her team was so welcoming. And it was great to talk to PhD students and professors and people studying all sorts of fields. And that's the thing, when I got there, I knew that Tamara was focusing on dark energy, and she certainly has other, you should see her body of work. She has been involved in so many papers, and she's constantly creating, working hard on what she does, and her team work incredibly hard. And they were just so welcoming and so interesting. And to sit, it was a privilege to sit in and listen to their weekly discussions on cosmology, on astrophysics, and the sort of really democratic process of how they thought, and the creativity, and just the interest. And then these side conversations, and at even lunchtime, when we're sitting there having a sandwich, they would go, and get out the whiteboard and write something down. And even to the point of, if you we were speaking about languages, and sure, there's about five of them who speak, three different languages. They're just so well read. It's amazing just how, and you know what I think it comes down to? Just curiosity about life. And so I again, to use that word for the third time, just resonated with the curiosity. And but it's always a thing of, can I do them justice? Not the other way around. They will never disappoint me. There is never one moment in any science hub that I've ever been to where they're going to bore me, or sure, they're going to talk about concepts that go way over my head, and I have to go back and back and back and back to understand some things. And I'm not a mathematician, so I'm not doing the math proofs. So I can only understand it on a certain level. And so when you have abstraction of difficult concepts and abstraction of poetry, sometimes you can make that too. Well, for poets, perhaps I'm too flowery, or I'm too full of hyperbole, or I'm too, I'm not going to get the concept exactly right. I've missed something. But at the same time, I just want, just want people to enter into the poem and think, oh, okay, I resonate with that, and maybe come out with understanding something about the science. And no, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say that really does speak to the curiosity. So many of these poems, they do arouse curiosity, and it's kind of up to the reader to, you can appreciate something, just the musicality of it. You can appreciate it as, purely a creative thing. But then there's also your sort of, it's almost like info dropping, it, and I loved that about it because I'm always caught between, I love learning. I'm always trying to learn about something, almost to the detriment of my fiction reading and seeking out more creative, you know, so which is why I probably haven't read as much poetry as I would like. And so your poetry excited me so much because I felt like it was sort of a twofer. I was getting both. I was I was being informed and enlightened, but at the same time, it was a meditative experience as well. There was one poem, I'm trying to recall the name of it, but it was, I hope I don't butcher this idea because I'm definitely not a scientist, but it was the idea that energy, it can't be destroyed. It's,
Emmy Noether in the last poem of the book. It cannot be created or destroyed. And Emmy Noether was just such an incredibly, incredibly interesting scientist. And really changed the face of physics in some way of understanding. So sort of concepts like that, to drop in and then hopefully you might understand or go away and think about or learn about the poet or the concept.
Yeah, and that was, you know, what was so interesting about it is because it was an idea that I was familiar with, but I had never actually interrogated where it came from. And it was actually an idea that, if I can just speak personally for a moment, it was an idea that gave me a lot of comfort when a few years ago, my father, he was dying of cancer. And at the time, you know, it gave me a lot of comfort, that idea. And it's kind of cheesy almost thinking back to it because I was watching the movie Doctor Strange at the time, and a lot of those ideas are in that movie, that more than anything, it's sort of energy returned or it's energy rearranged or something. And that idea helped me so much cope with, you know, the confusion and anguish I was feeling at the time. And, you know, I was watching a lot. The other thing that comforted me a lot is as I would go to sleep at night, and I did it for my mum as well, is I would put on the documentary series, The Universe, and I would just have that playing as I went to sleep. And I would do the same for her because listening to those ideas of something so far outside of this planet and things that are so, you know, so big, expansive, it gave so much perspective, I think, on the human experience. And I think that is something that I remember reading in your blog for ANAT, the ANAT residency with Tamara, is you asked her the question, if you could tell anyone that's not too familiar with this work, what is something that you would want them to know? And it was, it's just so amazing and vast. The universe is so amazing and vast outside of our little sphere. And that's what she would want to convey to people, is just that it's all kind of, we're all worrying about silly, trivial things on the daily. And that those things ultimately, if you knew how silly and trivial those things were, they just don't matter. And I think your poetry speaks amazingly to that.
Oh, and thanks so much for sharing, you know, your personal story there. And I agree, that comfort of knowing that we're in the, you know, a vast cosmic stage. Or, you know, I remember being young and hearing Carl Sagan talking about, you know, we're all made of star stuff, that matter inside of us has come from the stars, and that sort of, in a sense, recycling of energy is quite interesting. But yes, what Tamara says is so true, that, you know, we're on this tiny little blue planet, and we are minuscule on the cosmic stage. We are minuscule, and there are so many unknowns and so many possibilities. And that curiosity about looking out is really about looking in as well. That it kind of can define who we are by understanding physics. And so I find physics completely linked with humanities and with art and with big questions. And sometimes you mentioned Doctor Strange, which I absolutely love. And And with movies or whatever, they can play around with, and I certainly play around with concepts too, but there's always that sort of sometimes that misunderstanding, like quantum entanglement, that perhaps, you know, something vastly far away can affect us here, that we're sort of connected somehow. And we can simplify that and say, well, that's just you and me. We kind of understand each other or something. So sometimes we take quantum physics and or big concepts and quite simplify them, but we are part of the stars. We are, you know, I love the fact that gold is on this earth because, you know, and platinum because of two neutron stars crashing and being part of our makeup. It's just, yeah, it's just so beautiful. And then, so for me, it began with the outer, the cosmic arena, and then thinking about the particle physics, the tiny, and how they're interconnected. And I love that conversation.
And to speak, just to touch on the science a little bit, you worked with the Australian Research Centres of Excellence in Particle Physics at the TerraScale, OSGRAV,
Yes, OSGRAV.
and Dark Matter Particle Physics. So just to touch on COEP, that one's in Melbourne.
COEP, yeah, was in
Yes.
Melbourne, yeah.
I had to do a little digging because I didn't, first of all, I wasn't too familiar with this work in Australia anyway. And then having had a look at COEP, I was blown away because a few years ago, many years ago now, I'd learned of this thing that was going to change, you know, the way we study particle physics, the Large Hadron Collider. And just as, you know, I've always ducked in and out of scientific interest. I've never delved down too many rabbit holes. It's more that if I hear something big, I'm like, oh, what's that about? And I remember learning about that. And I was like, whoa, this is the place where Australia is linked to that Large Hadron Collider facility in CERN. And I also want to mention it as something that's quite pertinent since Peter Higgs passed away last, well, Monday, yeah, last week. And he was honored for something called, something probably everybody's heard of, but maybe don't fully understand. I still don't fully understand it, but something that is quoted as having transformed what we know about the building blocks of the universe, the Higgs boson particle. And you actually have a poem about the Higgs field in stellar atmospheres, the first line of which, why we don't disappear into the noiseless frailty of existence, which just, you know, that made so much more sense to me once I did actually go digging. And I think having read that line, I would have just thought, oh, that's beautiful. That's, but I love that the curiosity about that, having to sort of, you know, go away and find out a little more and then contextualize it. I could appreciate it in two ways. And whenabouts did that piece come about? Was that when you were speaking with scientists at Co-op?
They certainly gave me such an education on what the Higgs boson was and the Higgs field. And at the time, that was around 2016, 2017. And I was really lucky enough to travel to CERN and talk to scientists there. It wasn't part of an official residency or anything like that. It was me talking to people through COEP and going, and they had a major you know, stage there and a connection, as do many scientific hubs here have a connection to CERN as well. So because at CERN they're studying everything, so many things. And of course, you know, 2012 the Higgs boson was discovered, which was hypothesized by Peter Higgs and others much earlier on. And to have that come to fruition in your lifetime, imagine being Peter Higgs. And by all accounts, he seemed very humble and you know, didn't like so much fuss, but he was quite the celebrity just because to have that theory and then that actually be proven. And that was proven very early on when the Large Hadron Collider was turned on. And so it's such a beautifully rich hub of scientists learning and going through everything.
Yeah.
So it was really thought, you know, that when it was turned on, that there'll be other particles that would be discovered as well, and there'd be proof of supersymmetry and all these other things. And that hasn't come into fruition, but by no means does that mean that it's not rich with possible discoveries, small discoveries, all sorts of other things, and in really important research. And I love those hubs and places like COEP and the Center for Dark Matter is so important, and that's on the frontier of international collaboration and international recognition, and it's really amazing. And OSGRAV, you know, were part of in 2016 when we discovered gravitational waves through LIGO and Virgo collaborations. And they were incredible to talk to. The scientists there and the hub there were amazing. And I was very lucky to chat to them. And, you know, you'd have to ask them, but maybe, you know, I'm bothering them a little bit, but very, very beautiful people who are really willing to share what they're learning and discovering.
Yeah, I think they're, in a way, they're probably also just responding to the authenticity of your curiosity, you know, that you actually want to know. There would be people, which always surprises me when there are these concepts that are just almost so far beyond our comprehension that people can look up into the stars and go, oh yeah. And it's just insane to me that you couldn't be more curious about all of this stuff that's happening outside our, as Tamara put it, our little sphere of, it's so strange. But maybe if we just change tack for a second and talk, not all of the poems in stellar atmospheres are necessarily informed by science. Some of them sort of speak to your experience in, you were the first virtual writer in residency for Manchester City of Literature.
Yes, along with another writer in America. Yeah, it was amazing.
So so you said that you got to read a lot of old science books at the Portico Library.
Oh my God, yes.
And which I just would find overwhelming, because I think you actually mentioned in an interview that you did for Manchester Literary Festival that it was very hard to sort of stay on one path. You know, you had so much open to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't imagine I can imagine only that you'd be like a kid in a candy store with that much knowledge open to you. And you did say that much of what you read was from the 1800s.
That's right. Because of the nature of, we were in lockdown here in Melbourne in 21, they had periods of lockdown at the same time as well, even in 21. So it was that, you know, very difficult going out and so forth. So to have access to one, another city, a library, a librarian who was amazing, Dr. Tom Keep, he was amazing in showing me all this 19th century literature on science. And I thought, okay, this is what I want to look at. What were people in popular science books talking about in the day? What was the latest discovery? And, you know, there was Mary Somerville and, you know, looking at Laplace and lots of different books that had come out at that time. And it was amazing. So they often they'd talk about the ether and and these strange things that they didn't understand. And we can kind of have a, you know, we honestly giggle because of it's understandable, but they thought they were on the forefront of something. And what was really amazing, you know, one of my, the books is, you know, in a series of letters to a lady.
to a lady.
Yeah, I love that. And, and, you know, off the top of my head, I can't remember the writer, but let me see. they thought that writer, which was J.P. Nichol, said in an interview at the time or in the paper at the time that he wanted the lady represented general public, that, you know, that if he could get a woman to understand science, then everyone could understand science. And I just found that
How kind of him to break that down.
Exactly. But, it was quite incredible that especially there was one, the moon considered as a planet, a world, and a
that
satellite.
That was one of my favorites, yes.
I'm so glad, because Jane Nasmyth and Jay Carpenter, this is 1874, they got almost like plaster models, plaster cast the moon after observations with telescopes, and they were so accurate. And if I would encourage anyone listening, if they go and look at this book online, which is very readily available and pictures are, it's almost as if we're looking at pictures from NASA. It's so beautifully done, and it was done with this really new concept at the time called Woodbury types, which was a type of photography, and it looks amazing. And sure, they got some science wrong, you know, there was active volcanoes on the moon and so forth, but because of their very meticulous drawings, these are just beautiful depictions, and it felt otherworldly. And to have a librarian, how many of us would love it? Just, okay, tell me, librarian, about everything you know. He was incredible, and it was one of the most precious times to just have a conversation with someone online and have these. And then all these books were readily available. That was the other thing about doing books in the 1800s. Otherwise, I couldn't look at modern collections online. Some I could, but I really wanted to look at are these popular science books? How have they evolved? And I actually haven't stopped researching that. I keep going on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, how could you? It'd be just such a fascinating contrast between, particularly marrying up the language that was used then for what they perceived, and then what we know now would just be so fascinating. I really did love that poem. And you also, something that you spoke to in that interview with the Manchester Literary Festival, you said that there was kind of a natural poetry with the way that some scientists spoke about their discoveries, or their sort of or at least what they perceived, a lot of found phrases and that sort of thing, accidental poetry, and I quite love that. So there is a bit of that in that poem and a few of the other poems in the collection. I did want to talk a little bit about, so Stellar Atmospheres is sort of a collection of the cosmic, the creative, and the personal. You do touch on a lot of personal. It's almost kind of like you're zooming in and zooming out in the collection. You know, you sort of like, you know, meanwhile back at Earth, and then you kind of take a little snippet from your life. And if it's okay to touch on, you do include a poem. It's Constellation Rifts, and I did see that you actually posted a reading of this 3 weeks back, so we'll link that in the show notes, because it's a beautiful poem. It's very different from a lot of the other poems in the collection, but again, it's this really interesting sort of, it's almost like a meta moment where you're noticing yourself. And you know, I'd be quite honored if you could touch on that. I think it's, again, it comes back to that finding some solace in the metaphors provided by the universe.
Yeah, it was like, you know, we spoke at the start about your connection with your dad and thinking about the universe and you know, him being right there with you for sure. And so, yeah, in 2022, I was very sick and tried every test under the world, and nothing came up with anything. And then I swanned into a mammogram and thinking, oh, this is fine. And I had breast cancer. And so it was one of those things where, again, you know, at that time, every consultation was alone. Every moment was alone. It was just me and the doctor. No one was allowed in, even after surgery, through radiation. No one, you know, I had one visitor when I was in hospital for 5 or 6 days. And it was such an alone moment, but I've never felt stronger in that I'm not anti-religious by any means, but I'm not religious, and I just have such comfort in the universe. And when I was getting a scintigraphy, and for those who don't know, it's injecting nuclear medicine into you. So, my mail is going off. I'll turn that off. it's about getting nuclear medicine injected into you. So when they do the surgery, they know exactly where to go and what to avoid as well. So, and it's very, very painful. Maybe not for others, but it was for me. It felt like 1,000 bees stinging me and someone sitting on me. And I was in so much pain for such a short amount of time. But when I looked up, I'm looking at supernovas, I swear to God, because it's gamma, I think it was gamma rays that were part of this as well. So I was just seeing these little dots on a screen, just almost like fireworks and moving and like galaxies. And I was just like, oh my God, can I have the video of this? And they were laughing. They're like, are you into science? I'm like, my God, this
Just a
is the
bit.
most amazing thing I've ever seen. And then, of course, in an MRI, I'm thinking about all the science that has gone into this and the progress of science, and nuclear medicine started really interesting me as well. And every test that I had, it was going further and further into this, keeping me company. And so that poem, Constellation Rifts, I just wrote, almost in just a couple of hours. I've certainly edited it, but I just sat down and it just all came out about how each step of the process science has really been with me. And so that's how that one came about.
Yeah, I was really blown away by that poem. Also, because, there's even sort of an element almost, or at least how I read it, there was almost an element of sort of absurd humor in the beginning too, where you receive the call and you're like, aren't I supposed to be sitting down? And I just, I feel like too, there's something to giving the meaning to your discomfort in that moment as well, that I think if other women were to read that, if you're able to sort of give a bit more meaning or context, I think, to that kind of pain and discomfort, certainly it doesn't remove it, but it, I think it almost makes it the tiniest bit easier to cope with it, I think, because it's not for nothing. So I'm definitely going to link that reading in the show notes, because there really is no better way to hear it than and I, your cadences and everything, that your poems, I appreciate hearing them in your own voice, because I can read them in my own cadence in my head, but it's not the same thing.
Oh, no, thank you. And I'm so glad you talk about the absurdity, because when I was going through it, I read everything. I read, there's so many great poets who've written about breast cancer. There's so many great writers. There's so many, just even blogs, personal anecdotes. I reached out to people who were going through the same thing. It was just that community again. And to me, that is sort of a network, and I see networks in, whether it's dark matter or diseases, the human body, there's all these networks, brains, and just to talk to people was great. So yeah, I thought, didn't you know don't you think that if you're getting told you have cancer, that you're going to get come in and sit down with some tissues, and here I'm going to tell you very elegantly. And it was like I was just ordering a muffin and answered the phone, and they said, oh yeah, you've got cancer, can you come in? It's like, what? I had to take a moment, just a breath. And also, post-surgery, I literally was, because I'm very, have the lowest tolerance for any, headache tablet, any drug whatsoever, alcohol, anything. And so I'm post-surgery in so much pain and so high that I can't even text my friends to say I'm okay. But an email came up, or a text message, that were like, buy these shoes. And I went, oh my God, and pressed twice. And
I do remember that you could order two pairs of leopard print shoes, but you couldn't text your friends. It's such a memorable line.
It's so true. So now I wear those shoes. I go I, 2 weeks, you know, after getting home, these shoes arrive and I have zero recollection of doing it. And I was like, they're great. And they were in the right size. So.
Oh, amazing. Okay. Well, thank you. Hi, Alicia, for the
Exactly.
Actually, we were touching on gravitational waves before, and that is something that I don't want to miss the opportunity to talk about because I was kind of disappointed when I found out that it wasn't currently a thing, but you helped create, I want to call it an experience, Particle Wave. It was a planetarium show, and you helped create this with other writers, artists, scientists. And as far as I recall, you did have that come to Brisbane
Yes,
for the World Science, which is amazing. That was 2019. The same year, New Scientist London as well, which is
Yes,
a pretty big
yes.
deal.
Yeah, it was amazing.
New Scientist is one that I follow. So I was like, ooh, that's so exciting. What was it like to translate your words? I don't want to say add your words, but you know, what was it like to try and use image and sound in addition to your words to create an experience, particularly as a collaborative project with?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked because at the moment, most of my work is in collaboration with visual artists and sound artists, and I create sound as well, but I love working with other artists. So in 2009, I was director and co-creator of a show called Elemental, which was about the beginning of the universe. And what I did there was spoke to other writers, artists, and spoke to scientists and got the funding. And, you know, so it was definitely director producer role of getting everyone together and created this planetarium show, which was amazing and great. And from that, when there was the discovery of gravitational waves, I thought, yes, this is perfect. And was very lucky, just everything sort of fell into place where I spoke to OSGRAV. They were really forthcoming with a couple of their artists, and as well as because they have a couple of in-house creators who are incredible, and spoke to the scientists about the science, and then reached out to other writers and visual makers and, you know, and sound artists, and created this show called Particle Wave, which was just sort of a love letter to gravitational waves. So I have four or five pieces in that, and I sort of top and tail the show. But to have someone like Maxine Beniba Clark, who's an incredible poet, Omar Musa, Lisa Gorton, Jordi Albiston, who passed away in 21, she was amazing. And to have these writers, you know, I had to give them some information about gravitational waves. They do their own research, and then to have their interpretation, and then to have snippets of the scientists talking. And one thing I wanted to capture with the scientists talking was, one, tell me about the science. Tell us about what it means. How big is LIGO, these 4 kilometer arms? What are gravitational waves and so forth? But also to capture, what was the moment like when you knew that the world was going to get this information out? And then they're like, oh, wow. Oh my God. Oh, well, you know, and that giggle and that laughter. And one of my favorite things is Dr. Katie Mack, who many people might know. She spoke about how, you know, everything is passing through us at the moment, you know, gamma rays and X-rays and dark matter, dark energy, just everything is going through us, and gravitational waves being one of them. It's just the way she kind of she's giggling about it. And I think it is just capturing that just genuine love of science and absolute awe and curiosity about the universe. So to create a show like that, and it came together quite quickly, but again, as anyone who's ever put on a theater show or a movie or anything, the behind the scenes of getting the, you know, the funding and everything was is hard. But yeah, once that came together, that was amazing. And that toured a lot of places around the world and was booked for so many places in 2020. And we all know what happened.
Do you think we'll see it again?
Yes, look, it
Yes.
plays in Melbourne quite a bit, and it has played around the world, and I definitely want to bring it back to Brisbane, so.
Yeah. Oh, I'd happily travel to. It'd be a good excuse for me to come down to Melbourne.
Oh, I'd love to have it in Brisbane again. I love Queensland, by the way. It's just
Yeah.
amazing.
We've had some lovely days recently. So, do you think this is something that's going to be sort of a different avenue for you? Do you think you'll create a lot more, immersive art, or is there going to be a focus more on, because you did say that many of the poems that have emerged from your time with Tamara in the ANAP residency, Synapse residency, we're going to see a lot more of those coming. So, what are you thinking of next? Where are we going?
Yeah, so I was really lucky, just to preface that, saying like the end of last year, I had an installation as part of the exhibition for Dark Matters at the Science Gallery in Melbourne with Andrew Watson, and he created this be these beautiful visuals and music, and it was a triptych, and it was a 10-part series on dark matter, but you could walk in and walk out. They were really short, little short films. And it was just a wonderful experience to create kind of longer narratives where you could sit there and also abstract in a way that you could just hear a sentence and walk away. You don't have to sit and watch the whole thing. And I love that immersive moment. I love taking poetry out of the page, off the stage, just somewhere different. So I will always create that, and very inspired by what I did with Tamara. And the great thing about ANAT, and for those who don't know, the Australian Network of Art and Technology, they were so supportive, and that moment with Tamara and her team was meant to be the creations, the research, the nebulous, the start of things. And as an artist, you come away, and I kind of felt guilty that at that time, maybe I've written a few poems, but I'm like, okay, where's the big work? But I can take months with pieces and getting it right and coming up with the right collaboration. And I've got hundreds of hours of recordings, but yeah, so it's always that pressure to create something, which is a great pressure. But yes, more installation, more. I love writing for the page, and I love reading. I read really widely, but yeah, more music and visuals and words go together so well, don't they?
Yeah, well, that's so wonderful. I mean, particularly because, you mentioned 2020, and I think something that did happen amongst, I have mainly muso friends, and then everything changed for them at the time. And live music, live performance, it sort of took such a dive. And I think it's really exciting to know that it's not just music coming alive again, that people seem to be getting more creative in what they're putting out there in terms of entertainment now. People are sort of thinking a little more experimentally about, and it's not so much sit down art necessarily. It can be sort of more immersive,
Absolutely.
and there's opportunities for a person to become, in their own way, a part of the art. And, I was reading the introduction to your collection, and Andrea Russell, who's quite a fascinating personality, a media artist and interdisciplinary researcher in science art. There were actually so many lines that in the introduction where she really encapsulated your work in Stellar Atmospheres, but I had to pick one just for brevity. And the one that I landed on was, it's a unique poetic linguistic translation of astronomical phenomena. That's going to be the one that captures it. And I really hope that, science lovers and poetry lovers alike come upon this work. What I was thinking about reading it is that I have so many quite analytically minded friends that are in things like engineering and mathematics and are sciencey people. And I feel, whenever I've talked to them about writing or poetry, it goes over the head quite a bit. But I feel like what's cool about some of these poems is that there are things in there for people to latch on to that is going to connect with, it's going to connect with something, you know, it's either going to connect with their humanity, it's going to connect with some personal experience, it's going to connect with their curiosity about the world or the universe, or, you know, it might even just be someone who's going in there to fact check about particular scientific discoveries and figures. And yeah, I think it's such an amazing collection of work, and I can't wait to read through it as a third time. Admittedly, I find there is a lot of fiction because I am such a non-fiction person, because I want to learn. I often find that I don't give fiction or poetry a lot of time, but I'm so keen to get back into it, and I'm excited to see what other people say about it. And you're launching on Wednesday, yes, at Readings Carlton.
That's right, launching this week in Melbourne, which is great. And and with all, as with any poetry collection, sometimes it's not widely available. So do go to Cordite Books and have a look if you do want to get a copy and you can't get it in. Or although, of course, your local independent bookstore will get it in.
Either way, I'm going to have, you know, a cup of tea and a nice chair out on my balcony ready for when it comes. So the best place people can find you if they want to see more of your work, I'll definitely link a few of these in the show notes. So you do have your own site, but, you know, you're so prolific. I was even listening to one of your old podcasts, Science Friction, which was a fun listen. You're so good with metaphors, with with trying to explain these huge ideas in metaphors. So
bless your cotton socks. And to say Science Friction, which was Natasha Mitchell's show on Radio National, which is, I highly recommend just going back and listening to old shows. She now does Big Ideas. But she said to me, beginning of the universe, end of the universe, let's go. And she asked me that the day after I'd found out I had cancer. And I was about to say to her, look, this is way too much. What, you know, and she would have understood 100%. But I said, yes, this is awesome. And the night before I did surgery, I was up till 2 a.m. doing the first the last touches of the beginning of the universe. And she was mortified, as you would be, but I would say, no, you don't understand. It was everything. It gave me a focus. It gave me a distraction. It was perfect because I didn't once think about the surgery. So when I was tired and I woke up, I not thought about it. And then I went, oh, okay, yep. For her, I will be forever grateful. And I just wanted to quickly before I can't, you mentioned Andrea Russell, and she's one of the most beautiful, incredible, incredibly talented artist who's also a scientist. And there's so many, you know, I understand you completely talking about nonfiction. I'm a nonfiction nut. I read fiction and I read poetry widely, but I don't read as much fiction as I used to, just because there's always something else to know. There's a book about worms, a book about numbers, and a book about quantum physics or something. So, but yes, you can go to my website, and I'm not prolific. I'm a snail. It's just that sometimes things come at the same time. I'm really, really slow.
I should say widely published.
Thank you. Bless you. Yes. So I guess I put some information on the website. So yeah, of the latest things.
Actually, what you were saying about the Hustle for the Science Friction podcast and how that, you know, you weren't thinking about your surgery and you were kind of, you know, you were focused. I think to bring it back to your poetry and just about how we might want to think about the universe is that there is a lot of comfort to be gained in looking outside of ourselves and reconnecting with that wonder that we so often detach from, you know, worrying about tiny things. And I do it myself all the time, and then I think how silly that I'm worrying about the fact that my tea wasn't made to the milkiness that I like, or, you know, that I
that
might
is
have...
a tragedy though. It is a tragedy.
It is, because I feel like it's a wasted tea bag. And I actually remember the moment that I've that I finished the last poem in Stellar Atmospheres and how I just felt really silly and small and kind of absurd because I'd read this thing and I was sort of awash with inspiration, and then I sort of closed it and then I was like, oh, that's the finish. And then I was kind of back in my living room and my partner was next to me, you know, eating his breakfast and scrolling mindlessly on his phone, and I just squeezed his leg and then got up and then I think went to wash the dishes. And I just thought that that was such a, that's the exact type of experience where I was so connected with wonder, and then a minute later I was doing something so domestic. And the absurdity that we can, that we have access to both in some way, I think really comes through in the collection. And it's a good reminder for people to look outside themselves.
Oh, thank you so much for your understanding and your kindness. And yeah, there's an old Zen proverb that I'm absolutely butchering, but it's something like first meditation, then dishes. you've just created a poem talking about that moment with your partner next to you, and it is that narrative. And I always say this, our lives aren't cliche. We can write in a cliche way, but our lives aren't. And you just said that in such beautiful detail, that we've got to notice things around us. And with war and all these terrible things happening right now, we need to look outside of ourselves and also, yeah, just understand that we are such a part of a fragile ecosystem and a fragile planet, and whether that's the environment or looking at the universe, that we're just so connected in ways that are unimaginable.
Yeah, and it's beautiful to remember that it does give one the feeling of hope when we're so overwhelmed. So
I like that hope. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, this has been such a pleasure, Alicia. I'm really excited to see more of your poetry come out, hopefully in your own voice as well, and in various artistic forms. So I'll put in the show notes where you can find more of Alicia's poetry, more information on some of the other creations, a bit more about, I feel like I didn't do justice speaking to some of the scientific institutions that you've had conversations with, but
they're doing incredible work, and just touching upon it is amazing.
Yeah, so I'll put more information in the show notes for sure. And I think that's probably the best place to leave it on a positive note.
Thank you so much. And how good is science right now? Like an absolute gem and a hub of brilliance, and it's needed in the literary landscape, the scientific landscape, and the artistic landscape. It's so good.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I'm so glad you're doing this podcast.
Science Right Now is sponsored by the Australia Council for the Arts, hosted by Amanda Niehaus and Jessica White, and produced by Taylor Mitchell. Thanks so much for listening.